This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Lookout Landing Podcast. You are listening to us live from a Irish pub in the Fremont neighborhood of Seattle, where it is quiet enough for us to record a podcast, but also they have beer, so it's a win-win.
There are some bagpipes.
There are some bagpipes and like four other people, so they're going to get some takes whether they like it or not. My name is Matthew Robertson. I'm a staff writer at Lookout Landing, and I'm joined by my friends, my drinking buddies, my one Irish friend, one non-Irish friend. We'll start with the Irish, as we are in your home turf.
I don't know if I count as Irish.
Kate Prusser, are you Irish? First question.
I am. I mean, I definitely am. My maternal grandparents were, like, super into the whole Irish thing, and I was just doing a killer reading out of this book, Celtic Invocations.
She was.
By the decidedly not Irish sounding Alexander Carmichael.
Carmichael British, seems Irish.
That's a British ass name.
Aren't they the same
one.
Thing? Is that gonna get? Yeah. Am I gonna get beat up for saying that?
I can say it here. I don't know. These are fighting. All right, fighting
so we didn't reach a conclusion, but that's okay.
Anyway, I would say that I am the most Irish out of the three of us.
Okay. We'll definitely grant you that.
Yeah, that's fair. That other voice you hear is the decidedly not Irish John Troopin.
No, a mixture of Eastern and Central European.
Do your people harbor any hatred towards the Irish?
I do not think they have strong feelings.
Really?
I mean, mostly Russian and then a little bit of German and Danish.
The oppressed like, don't tend to shit on the other oppressed.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah. The Russian Jews of my family long ago, I don't think, had strong feelings, particularly on the United Kingdom and its various issues.
Cool. All right, well, that's the podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next week.
Just Heritage Hour with Matthew, Kate, and John.
No, the reason why we're here partially is because the Mariners have an off day, and the first one in a while.
Yeah, so we 17.
17 straight days.
Well, it was maybe, had it been 14 or 17?
17. This was because they had a whole 17
yeah, that's
day
right. Before the Angels trip. Series, it was 14. And then by the time they were done, it was 17.
Impressively,
yeah, right.
Including a six-game homestand in the middle with two road trips on either end.
Yeah.
Which is especially impressive considering that they've played roughly two more games than most of the rest of the league because they started in Japan. So you would think, surely they'll have a slightly less strenuous trip. Travel schedule afterwards.
You would think that.
Hopefully that will even out throughout the rest of the year, but yeah, it was definitely quite a rough start and quite a weird stretch.
Well, yeah, we got an interesting mix of teams in this stretch. Like we had the White Sox and the Royals and the Angels who appear to be bad.
Hot trash on a tin roof.
Yeah, correct. An old Irish proverb. And then we got the Astros, who are, I think, probably the best team in the American League.
Yeah.
And Cleveland, who has the best pitching, maybe. At least the pitching that we saw.
Right.
Like the top end of their rotation completely overmatched the Mariners.
They played three games in a row against, I believe it was the three pitchers who finished top three in FWAR last year in the American League. In Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, and Trevor Bauer. Which was just like...
And spoiler alert, the Mariners did not win any of those games, unfortunately.
We also got, unfortunately, like the best version of every one of those pitchers.
Right.
Like, we had Verlander at his extreme Verlander-ness.
Yeah.
We had Gerrit Cole being not Gerrit Cole, which, like,
you said his name wrong both times right there.
Yeah, well...
it is Gerrit.
Yeah. Yeah. Gerrit. Whatever, I like to call
just
him
because
Gerrit.
Just because I've called the now former Mariner... Gareth Morgan Jareth a lot because I like to think of him as the guy in the labyrinth.
Yeah.
It does not mean that all
all Gareths are Garrett. Yeah. Whatever. I don't know.
And then we got Bever Trower, who really, really did his thing.
Future Mariner, Trevor Bauer.
Future Mariner, maybe, on like a $69 million one-year deal.
Yeah.
That's what he's going for.
Yeah, signed on 420.
Yeah, we'll get the first one will be $42 million, the second one will be $69 million.
As he deserves.
John will explain all of this, I'm sure, at some point. But I do want to point out that, like, Cole had a lousy start in his next start. He just totally melted down against the Rangers, of all people. Mm-hmm. I think the Rangers won that series, so...
Yeah, they whooped us.
Yeah, so, I mean, it wasn't just that we were getting... And, you know, you see this a little bit. I feel like, not to make an inopportune basketball analogy, but, like, the Huskies, when they were sitting on top of the Pac-12, they got everyone's best games. And I was seeing these teams that I'd seen be kind of trash other places, like... You know, when you're at the top of the standings, they want to come at you with their best stuff. And I almost feel like that's what happened with the Mariners over that homestand.
Yeah, I think part of it is probably, like, spite, too. Especially for the Astros, where it's like, oh, the Mariners think they're hot shit now because they're, you know, off to a good 20-game start.
Yeah, put them back in their place.
Right, which they did. And I mean,
they did, and the headlines reflected that.
Yeah, but it's interesting to think that, like, the Astros had to prove to themselves that they're better than the Mariners when, like, everyone with half a brain knows that. Like, most of the Mariners probably know that. But I guess, I mean, if it worked for them, it worked because they swept the shit out of us. Yeah. So.
Well, and a sort of, I mean, it was frustrating in the actuality, but it was not as though, like, well, I won't say that it wasn't like they were fully dominated because, like, they didn't give up any runs, but it was a very similar script to how the Mariners have succeeded in a lot of these games. Like, they got the pitch counts and they worked a lot of, they had a lot of 3-2 strikeouts, essentially, was like, instead of turning any of those into homers or, you know.
And they've said that they're going to strike out a lot because they're going to take close pitches at 3 and 2. And, like,
which is
if you want a pitcher who's going to be granted a bigger strike zone on a 3-2 count, like, if that influences anything, like, definitely Justin Verlander is going to get that favorable strike zone. And, there were a lot of questions about some of the umpiring in some of the series, and were calls that were going one way that were maybe not going the other way.
That is, I think, just what we have to be accustomed to when we have Omar Narvaez, who is the best offensive hitting catcher in the American League right now.
Terrible frame.
But that's absolutely terrible. Brutal, gives so much.
I think that's an interesting point, though, offensively, too, because they're such a patient team that you are kind of giving some of the power to the umpire, where it's like, if you're going to spit on that pitch that's super close, like, you have to be really confident not only that it's a ball, but that the umpire thinks it's a ball, which has backfired a couple times.
It has, but I also think you've seen, I mean, Daniel Vogelbach has a great reputation for knowing what the strike zone is. Like, you have a lot of guys on that team who know what the strike zone is, who don't put up a big fuss about calls that don't go their way. You know, you have guys like Haniger who really have a reputation as, like, this isn't a guy who's going to get mad about pitches that are way outside the zone or anything.
Domingo has been super patient.
Absolutely.
You know, even though he strikes out a fair amount, it's usually like he swings it, you know, something and doesn't quite get it, but, like, he's walking a bunch as well. Like,
Right. But you don't have, I mean, I just think the offensive reputation of the Mariners is, even if they don't have a great defensive reputation among the pitchers, you hopefully have some of that.
Yeah. It, man, I don't want to dwell too much on it, but, like, I guess here's the way I'll put it. I am pleasantly surprised at how few games have been like that Felix start, because I thought a lot of the games were going to be like that
The Felix start in Anaheim.
Where the bullpen gave up an 8-run lead.
Yeah.
And they still won somehow. Mm. But, like, I thought a lot of games were going to be like that, and a lot have been. But they've won way more of them than I thought they would. Like, I thought it would be like this, where it's like, hey, they're exciting, and, like, oh my god, it's, like, close. But ultimately, they don't quite have enough in them.
Yeah.
And maybe that will bear out more over the next several months. But it's... The formula has been essentially the same with a few variations on the final product.
Yeah, the Angels series feels like what we're going to get unless the roster changes. Like, it was I think it was 10 earned runs given up by the bullpen in four games.
Yeah.
And then, like, Marco pitched well and then gave up the homer to Trout, which will happen when you play the Angels. But, like, it seems like it's exactly that formula you're talking about, where they're probably going to score early, they're probably going to score late, and then you just hope that the bullpen doesn't give up runs late. Because they've been scoring. I mean, my favorite part about this team so far is they never seem out of it, so you can turn on a game at any time. Like Sunday against the Angels, I think they were down six runs in the ninth inning.
It was such a listless game the entire way through. And then at the last second, it was just like, oh, walk, walk, homer, like double homer, walk. Like
it was just a little too late, I guess. Yeah. I mean, they had their chance when Jay Bruce and Malik grounded out to end it. Sure. He's been pretty rough.
And we probably had, in the last, the Sunday game against the Angels, I think, the two worst relievers got the ball in Alanis and Armstrong, or at least the two who maybe have been the worst so far.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they hadn't given up their runs, then the runs the Mariners got in the ninth inning would have meant more. So.
And you wrote, go for it, Kate.
I think it's important to remember that Alanis is a great glass in case of emergency reliever. Like, he should not be here.
Right.
He should be in Tacoma.
I had to explain that to my family. There was a lot of, who are these guys?
Yeah.
And I was like, I barely know.
I mean, Armstrong struggling is troubling to me because I think he was someone they depended on at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
You know, Festa's got some mechanical issues that they're working out. Theoretically, he should be here. You know, Altavilla just got demoted to Tacoma. Strickland obviously is hurt. Chasen Bradford is on his way back. It seems pretty imminent since Alanis just got sent back to Tacoma. But you know, there was some degree of like, well, there's not a lot of depth in the bullpen, but also they're having to use some of the depth that really they is not ideal. I would not call RJ Alanis an ideal major league pitcher.
And it's
right
a crazy world to be living in where we're like, Chasen Bradford, please hurry and get here. Just so we can have a guy who's like pitched in the major leagues before.
It's really taught you the difference between like competence and just like, oh, this guy might give up some runs, but I also trust him to get out.
Right.
And like, oh my God, this could potentially just be a meltdown every time they're out there.
That's Swarzak for me. Like, I think he might give up one run every time he pitches, but I also think he'll get three outs eventually.
Yes. I think that
just through sheer rage.
He's
an angry man.
I didn't know all this about him, but he's been an experience to watch.
That barbed wire wrist tattoo really hides multitudes.
Yeah,
of his
actually, someone pointed this out amongst us, like amongst the staff, but I want to pose it to the listeners and the greater public. We think that at one point in his life, Anthony Swarzak had gauges, because you can see a little thing in his ear.
I think so. He has a weirdly shaped earlobe. I did a lot of recon on this.
Okay,
I'm going to go
If anyone knows for sure, please let us know.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing about Swarzak, especially the sort of trustiness beyond his questionable sort of years, is that, like, the bar in my head at this point is, oh, the catcher's offering their target there. That's probably where the ball's going to end up. And that's how I feel when Swarzak's pitching. And it is not how I feel when almost anyone else is pitching.
That's a good point. That speaks to like the competence and experience thing where it's like, I know I can throw it to where the catcher wants it, and if they hit it, so be it. Like, he's not going to overpower anyone.
But I think there's the other point of like the players who are putting the Mariners in position to win games are by and large people who could be part of like the next good Mariners team. And the people who are losing these games are mostly not.
Yes.
Right? Like, it's mostly the random
fungible
relievers who are
releases.
Like, whereas like, you know, obviously Encarnacion and Bruce have been good, have had contributing roles, but like outside of that, like Santana, Haniger, Narvaez, Vogelbach, even like Healy, like some of these pieces or several of these pieces could be part of the net. And that's like, that is some small solace when I watch another game get to be stressful for no goddamn reason.
To stick with the relievers a little bit, because I do want to go back to Healy, who I think has been super impressive, but Connor Sadzik, who potentially could be with the team for a while, the outing he had where he struck out Mike Trout and like held down. And also, I don't think Scott Servais necessarily meant to use his best reliever in the highest leverage point, but it was.
He stumbled into it.
Yeah. Like, I think accidentally we used the best reliever we had in the pen for in the toughest spot.
Mm-hmm.
But just seeing, because I'm thinking about how I watched where Narvaez was putting his target, and Sadzik hit every target. Yeah.
Which is wild, because, like...
He was not doing that last year.
No, he was not doing that with Texas. Like,
and he had one outing, too, for us, where he just,
And I think we will see more of that. But if it can become increasingly more that way, which for the most part it has been, that's a guy who throws 96 to 100 with, like, an increasingly decent slider.
He struck out Trout on 98.
Yeah.
Like, and what was interesting about that appearance he had on Saturday, was it Saturday?
You recap both.
So many games.
Yeah, we're...
So, Saturday, he was pitching backwards, using the slider to set up the fastball, rather than using the fastball to set up the slider. Yeah. And it was so smart, because he could place that slider wherever, and it has enough movement to where it's a swing and miss pitch. Mm-hmm. He'd get guys in this 0-2 hole, and then he could just uncork the 98. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it was outside, it was outside.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, twice, Fletcher and Trout, he had them swinging through it. So I thought that was a huge step forward. Yeah. I'm really excited.
And not
excited.
A team that swings and misses. Like, notably,
lowest,
whether they're
lowest
very, whether
swing
they're
percentage
good,
in MLB.
Yeah, whether they're like a good offensive team or not, they're not striking out very much. So that's, you know,
no, they will stand up there and take some pitches, which is smart if you're the Angels and you're regularly running out Tommy La Stella to have that be your strategy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely some strategy in action, especially when you're facing, like, I'm sure for Sadzek's not a good example because he was in the division, but, like, for the Angels, if they're getting a reliever who they've never seen before,
Rossed
it's like,
up.
Yeah, like, let's just stand here and see what happens, which, you
which
know,
is
a
did.
Decent threat, or Brandon Brennan, who no one has really seen,
right.
Who's been a revelation.
I mean, you wrote about this today.
Sure
we're
did. Check out lookoutlanding.com.
But, like, Brennan, Elias, and Sadzek, and Swarzak have been dominant. Dominant.
Swarzak's not in the dominant category.
Solid. That's right. The rest of them in, like,
Brennan has been truly, like, unhittable.
Yeah.
It's wild.
I mean, yeah, like, that's the type of stuff where it's like all of those people can be here for a while.
Yes.
So long.
And
as
it's a huge win for the analytics department, too, for, identifying Brennan and... Mm-hmm. Like, going out and aggressively getting him, doing whatever it took, basically, to get him.
Yeah.
Sadzek, which I was confused about that. I was like, this guy doesn't throw strikes. Well, now they've done something with him.
Yeah.
So.
What has been worrying to you about this sort of stretch? Because obviously we talked a little.
Because I want to talk about the good stuff. Well, so, like, I'm not done. We're going to talk about Ryan Healy. Who just...
That's right.
Okay, let's let Kate talk about Ryan Healy, and then we'll rain on the parade.
Well, because I wanted to let you swing to the good afterwards. I wanted to
That is actually a good way to do it.
Yeah. Let's do the, as we used to call it in writing class, the praise sandwich.
Yes.
PQP, praise, question, polish.
Yeah. Oh,
so you start out with something nice, and then you trouble the waters a little bit, and then you end with something nice.
I listened to your suggestions. I'm curious because, you know, we talked a little bit about the Cleveland and Houston series, which were decent process, bad results, but also some like, oh, they're not actually, you know, this good.
Yeah.
But what has been sort of worrisome to you, maybe not necessarily among the bullpen, but among guys who you've wanted to see hopefully be a part of the team going forward?
I can feel my soul leaving my body.
Yep.
I'm so bummed about it.
We all have the same answer.
Malik Smith has been really bad.
Oh, my God.
I have a different answer, so I won't...
And, luckily, you know, if we're trying to spin it positively, these are kind of his spring training at-bats. Now it's past the point of a normal spring training sample size, but he didn't play at all in the spring, didn't play in Japan, so he was... getting his feet back under him and his forearm or whatever it was, feeling good again against live pitching, while also the Mariners are playing well. So there's the added pressure to do well while everyone else is playing
no
well
bad.
And having
oh
fun.
Oh boy, has he looked bad.
He's not looked great in the field or...
Sides.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, he has shown all of last season, he's shown that he can be a useful big league player. So it's in there somewhere. He's just got to figure out.
And he's incredibly useful on the bases. When
that's
he
true.
Does get on base or as a lead inning pinch runner... I'm Malik's going to steal this bet. Malik's, I think, is... If I had to pick one player out on the bases in a, like, very close one-run situation,
absolutely,
whatever...
Yeah.
Over D, I think, absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, it's...
But it's been a huge bummer.
They moved him to ninth for a couple games. Like, there have been the Mitch Haniger in center and then Domingo and Bruce in the corners, which, you know, as much as I like to see Malik Smith and I want him to succeed, like, when I saw those lineups, I was like, okay, yeah, like, good move. Like, you don't want to just let it fester and get worse because, you know, he can only pretty much hit, like, lead off eighth or ninth. You're not going to hit him anywhere else. So, like, if it's lead off and he's struggling, like, you can't have the worst guy in your lineup getting the most played appearances.
I think I'm most... Yes, I was very happy to see that move made. Any time we have Haniger at the top of the lineup, you know that I love that. If D could hit reasonably well, too, like the way he's been doing, maybe you have that potential to move him up at some point, too. But I am most bummed about Malik in the field, because if he wasn't hitting, I'd be like, whatever, you know, he still brings some value, maybe he can take a walk. He does see a lot of pitches, and I've really enjoyed that.
And he's still walking, like, almost a 10%, like he's, but he's just striking out.
Yeah, no, I mean, Malik against any league average pitcher or better is troubling to me, but, you know, if he's up against somebody like, I don't know, who's one of the worst
An Angel starter.
Like a Chris Sale, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Which we've seen. That
was
facts. Yeah.
It's true. I mean, it's... But I want that to also... I want him to be carrying that value in the field, and he's just... His roots look sloppy. He's, you know...
His arm was never a strength.
His arm was never a strength.
Pasta.
And I don't know that they have... Whereas... Ryan has looked better and better at third base under the tutelage of Perry Hill.
He really has.
They do not have that in an outfield coach for Malik. I mean, they should probably be thinking about going and finding someone who can coach him in center a little better, because the athleticism is there, right? Like, he's got the ability. It's just there's something, and maybe it's something instinctual that's missing. Like, but I don't know. I think he needs some help out there.
Yeah, and he can accidentally get to balls that a lot of people would never get to, but
because of the speed.
He'll also take himself, you know, out of the possibility of catching the ball with some bad routes or bad instincts or whatever it might be. I don't want to speculate, but it's been tough to watch, and I guess another bright side is it can only really get better, hopefully. I mean, that's one way to
and
think
I mean,
of it.
Remembering that he didn't have a spring training is also important, I think.
Yeah.
He's still, like, and he's adjusting. He's adjusting to a bunch of ballparks he's not played a ton in. And
And to his credit, we haven't seen it really get to him. Like, he's still the jovial Malik Smith that we all expected.
Super fun. Super fun player. Love him a lot. But, yeah, it's been troubling.
It smells of D. Gordon last year to this point.
Man.
Yeah. I've been a little bit disappointed with Yusei Kikuchi, and not really in a way that makes me particularly concerned long term, but just in terms of, you know, he's a guy who his bread and butter is having good command and having command of a number of pitches, and, you know, you'll get hit hard sometimes if you're in the zone a lot, but I think he's been particularly unfortunate, you know. He's had a rough combo of when he's not been in the zone, he's put people on base, and then immediately followed that by being two in the zone. So hopefully he'll get, I think, to a place where he's getting more comfortable, and it's early in that. But I was looking forward to Kikuchi starts more, and I, you know, still am, because it's exciting to watch him work and figure things out, but he's not been
I think he's
impressive
rawer
so far.
Than I thought he was going to be.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I think that the transition has been harder than maybe some people thought it was going to be. I think that he's honestly adjusting to how American pitcher or American batters attack compared to how Japanese players attack. I think things that worked for him in Japan are not working for him here, and he's a little, because he does seem to be coming into things with a plan.
Yeah,
and he's not been a disaster.
He's
like,
not been a disaster.
It's
and it's what, four starts? Like,
yeah,
five,
sure.
Five,
yeah,
I think now, and it finally won one. But yeah, it's and it's not. like, you really want to see things be linear, right? Like, you want to see it was taking him 4 innings to really settle in, and it was taking 3 innings. And you want to see that linear progression, and it's not happening. Because, honestly, that's not the way learning works. Learning isn't linear most times. So, But I do think that, like, for the expectations that maybe some of us have and the excitement, it's proving to be a more arduous journey. And I don't think that you can talk about him without talking about the fact that he lost his father. And, and is, you know, I think the club has done a really good job of wrapping their arms around him and embracing him and loving on him. But, it's got to be so hard. It's I cannot imagine the kind of pressure he's under.
There are great quotes from Dee Gordon and I think Vogelbach as well. A few of the players talking about how, you know, how great he's been and how much they've liked him and how, you know, relieved they were for him to get his first win, especially with how difficult that whole situation has been. And I think, you know, he's still been the most, you see something, like, he just touched 96 one time, like a few times in his last start.
Well, his strikeout against Trout, it was the best fastball he'd thrown all day. He threw three pitches, 96, 95, 96.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, right, like, that's in there. Yeah. And I think, like, the more comfortable he gets, the more hopefully we'll see either sparks specifically of that or, you know, sparks like that of, like, this is when I break this out and I can maintain a similarly high level at other times. So,
and I think the fact that he did have his best velocity of the day against Trout shows that even though exterior you might see like a very composed dude and he like doesn't let anything get to him, like the velocity is telling you a story there a little bit, I think. And it is like, I am pitching against the best player in the world right now and I want to have a good showing. So you know that that's in his head a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's easy to sort of, like, fall into your own narratives that you've created in your head when watching sports. You're like, I think this guy is like this, and then you stick with that forever. Which is why the Ryan Healy Renaissance has been the Ryanaissance.
The Ryanaissance.
Trademark.
Title of the podcast.
Must credit Matthew Robertson. No one else can say that.
But the Ryanaissance.
It has been, like, really, like, because you, like, I didn't expect it to be this sort of wide-ranging. Like, if you would have told me before the season that he would make an improvement, like a noticeable one, I would have guessed, okay, he's either going to be better than I thought at third or better plate discipline, and he's done both, while also, like, hitting the ball in the air more and just having better at-bats overall. So, like, to see it all happen this fast, too, like, in the first, 30, 25 games of the season is, it's crazy. And we're all, like, you know, I've been trying to stay positive about Ryan for as long as possible.
We love him so much.
Yeah. Last year as a player was objectively tough, but
very hard to watch his at-bats.
Yeah. But now to see it be so opposite this early tells me that, A, the organization has done a decent job, but also, B, that Ryan has put in the work and, like, didn't let the narratives of the outside world sort of drag him down into this guy who can't do anything offensively or defensively.
I think when they traded for him, I was very confused about why they got him, because I was like, they're C the Z people, right? Like, this dude is the opposite of C the Z.
It was him and D, like, in quick succession.
Yeah, and I was like, what is happening to C the Z? And then last year you saw C the Z was just, like, non-existent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this year it does feel like there's a concerted effort to get back to it. You see D taking pitches. I mean, there have been games where D and Ryan have both walked. There have been games where Ryan's walked multiple times.
I didn't even know that, like, was allowed.
But it's, I mean, and Ryan, maybe not the fastest learner. Maybe it just takes a while for a message.
Maybe it takes a whole season.
Maybe. You know, maybe, and it's hard. I would imagine when you were brought over to a new organization and you're said, like, okay, like, this is how you are used to doing things, but this is how we do things here, and this is how you're going to do things from now on. And, like, you're doing that at the same time as you're playing a sport at the highest level. So,
yeah,
sure. I mean, maybe that's much tougher than we give it credit for, and
maybe baseball is hard.
Baseball's hard.
Big league pitchers, very good.
But I think I was very disappointed last year that the Ryan Healy experiment didn't work and they weren't able to transfer these things to him. But, like, he looks like a different player to me.
Yeah, 100%.
And his third base defense has been, I mean, I have gone from literally biting my hand every time a ball was hit to third base.
It's a gentle nibble.
It's a gentle nibble. I mean, there's still a small intake of breath. Like, it's not Kyle Seager over there. We're very spoiled by Kyle. I don't think, like, we realize as Mariners fans, like, how much Kyle Seager spoiled us because he was just so
reliable there.
Yeah. And I don't think that's normal. I don't think that the level of play we were accustomed to is normal necessarily.
It has sort of been a like golden age for third baseman in general around
the league.
That's a good
point. Yeah.
And like the drop off. Like we've had probably what, like a couple like Andrew O'Mine, Sean O'Malley, like whatever games, and like that's been about it over the last nearly a decade.
It's mostly just been Kyle out there.
So, it has been an adventure watching Ryan learn over there.
But learn like, he is.
It has, I mean, even in just like the first couple weeks, you saw him sort of adjust how he throws and like his, he was leaving everything high and now he's mostly working from like a lower arm slot where the ball's pretty consistently hitting, you know, if he gets the ball over there, it's getting Encarnacion in the chest. And, like, he's still inexplicably sliding half the time for every ball.
Yeah, I think he just likes it. it looks fun.
Ryan is of the earth, and he likes to, like, return. So,
exactly.
My mom very kindly would essentially sew patches at first when I was a child of, like, varying shapes into all of my like pants because I would slide around my house all the time. Like we had wood floors and I loved sliding and practicing like sliding into bases or making diving plays. And eventually it happened so much that it was just like, no fun shapes. You get a square, you get a circle. I feel like probably Ryan Healy's family, whoever was in charge of his clothing, had a similar experience.
Oh yeah.
Because
maybe
that
they just put knee pads on him.
Yeah, that would have been wise.
Like knee pads, kid.
Would have been wise.
I bet he was a very injury prone kid.
I imagine Ryan Healy's house. Bloody nose as a child, or like a bruise, black eye,
Or one of those things. You know those videos where it's like the parent like is in the bathroom for like 30 minutes or whatever, and they come out and the kids have like given each other haircuts, like something like that. I feel like he's like a very curious, like whimsical child who just tried things.
Absolutely.
And it's that spirit that's leading to him having success at third base. Like, I feel like Ryan was just like, looked himself in the mirror and was like, okay, Ryan, you're a third baseman now. And he's like, just going
and
out there.
Damn it, people like me. I really hope that's his clubhouse ritual every time.
I will say, there's been no more endearing quote that I've read in pretty much sports journalism ever than the full description of D. Gordon, like MLB The Show, using a controller, like
controlling me on a little controller.
Yeah, and I love how Ryan was like, I almost messed it up. Like,
I almost ruined the whole entire thing, is the exact quote.
This is, of course, Justin Bour's pop-up where D. Gordon screamed at Ryan to let it drop. And then conducted the entire play.
People were giving Ryan credit for it. That was hilarious. Ryan Divish did like, Ryan. I was like, oh, no. Have you met Ryan Healy? Like,
We're not going to say anything about that. We got a question that kind of is hinting at all these things that we're talking about. This comes from Michael Q. Cham on Twitter. Thank you, as always, to everyone who sent us Twitter questions. Michael just simply says, what are your thoughts on the DePoto development program thus far? And I think that we can sort of co-opt this to mean, like, you know, the people he's traded for, the people in the minors who are undergoing changes, the people at the big league level who have undergone changes. What do we think? With each sort of passing day and new acquisition, we get a new sort of perspective on Jerry DePoto. So where are you guys on old Jedi right now?
I gotta say, I've been pretty negative about the pitching acquisitions, because, like, ton of money to Mark Szczepanski, ton of money to Juan Nicasio, like...
Some ill-advised trades at the deadline last year.
Nick Rumblow. Like, I've been very concerned about their ability to identify pitching talent, which isn't necessarily... DePoto himself, it could be the analytics squad, whatever. Yeah. I don't know why, but
we should mention too that he did trade for Marco.
Yeah,
there have been
some
good parts. Turned Edwin into a closer.
It's a weighing out of things, right? So we have Marco and the Edwin success and
Wade LeBlanc. Was that Jerry?
Yeah. Well, I mean
that brought him back to Seattle.
It was Jerry twice, yeah.
Adam also with the Angels.
And I would say, too, like, it's not just that. It's Brian DeLunas. Like, it's Paul Davis. And I think this year, specifically with Brendan Brennan, who I was so doubting on.
We were making a lot of fun of him.
His name is Brandon Sean Michael Brennan. I mean, he should be the owner of this place. Like,
I didn't know that.
I'm Irish pub owner Brendan Sean Michael Brennan. Like, come on. That's a guy who, like, rents himself out every March 14th to be, like, a leprechaun at your party. Like.
I may or may not have called him an industry plant, insinuating that he was not a real baseball player. They just dropped him in there because he looked the part.
There was one video of him playing baseball on YouTube.
Yeah.
And at the time that we were writing about him, MLB TV was down, so we couldn't even go back and watch.
Yeah.
So there was only one... pretty grainy video of supposedly him playing baseball.
But yeah, he's another success story of the DePoto era.
Yeah, so I mean,
so
that, if they've been able to do something with Sadzik, like, I'm feeling pretty good about it. And also, it helps that, like, all the prospects, basically all the prospects in the minors are raking. Like, Jared Kelnick is destroying the South Atlantic League. He looks awesome. I know that was a really tough trade for a lot of... imagine what we'd be doing right now if we had Edwin Diaz. But, like, Jared Kelnick is looking every bit like the five-tool franchise cornerstone player that they said he would be.
Yeah, so. I mean, DTW has looked good. Fraley has looked good. J.P. Crawford's looked good.
Fine.
He's looked good. Fine. He's hitting 300,
400,
450
or something. Defense, but yeah, he's definitely been
hitting. He's hitting
Shed
better
Long.
Than Shed Long's been solid. There are other people whose names I'm blanking on, of course. And we're mostly talking about the hitters in that regard. But, you know, like Ricardo Sanchez has looked good. Justice Sheffield has struggled, and he's been sort of a main standout in struggling because Justin Dunn has looked pretty good.
Justin Dunn's looked good. And LJ Newsom, after attending Gas Camp.
Yeah. Shout out to Gas Camp.
Yeah, he went to Gas Camp and is the best pitcher in the best pitcher at high A, basically.
Yeah.
So far.
And then soon we get to see Eric Swanson make some starts with Wade on the shelf.
He had one good start. He's starting tomorrow's game.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about that, actually. And I actually wanted to touch on that a little bit specifically. It was like, it's a guy who a lot of people have understandably thought it's a guy with one really good pitch. And maybe that makes him a reliever. But, like, the M's have continually... over the years, bet on their own development.
Right.
And I love that, theoretically, but we've had a lot of, you know, inconclusive, I guess, answers for the most part. You know, they've done a good job identifying some players. You know, Haniger being identified as, like, not just kind of a throw-in piece, but...
Right.
It's still... It is... such a difference to essentially have an organization full of players that they chose at this point, and you actually can feel comfortable in saying, okay, they're evaluating these players, they're developing these players.
Yeah.
You can make much more conclusive decisions, and I've been pretty encouraged so far.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think he's earned the benefit of the doubt, him being Jerry DePoto on all these moves. Like, at least I'll give them a shot, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
After seeing Brandon Brennan actually be a person.
Right, and it would have been very difficult if, essentially, if this hadn't happened, if the players, not even at the major league level, but if the prospects had come out of the gate and really struggled across the board, you know, I think it's not so much that we're making a judgment on, well, a good first month here for guys, but that you're seeing the top level prospects most, for the most part, have success, and you're seeing, you're starting to see those extra guys who are fill out the rest of the roster.
Yeah.
Pop up, and that's where you, that's where a, you know, a good team becomes a deep team. You know, when you have guys like LJ Newsome,
right,
emerging, and so suddenly, oh, the pitching depth suddenly isn't
Darren
quite so
bleak. At AA.
Right. You know, like if you can make something out of these guys, you have the depth to work with a little bit better throughout the rest of your career.
Yeah. We have a question that also kind of fits nicely in here. I don't know if this is a thought that you've sort of wrestled with or has come to your mind during this surprising start, but a filthy raccoon on Twitter, what's up? they want to know, at what point does their current success hurt the rebuild? Can they still trade guys like D and Jay Bruce if they're in first place? I don't think D Gordon's getting traded, but no. Jay Bruce, Edwin, some of the relievers on right. one-year deals. At what point, I guess, can you trade them if they're contributing to a first-place team that might accidentally make the playoffs?
I mean, I don't think that the return that you're going to get out of any of the players who are tradable is so significant that if they happen to continue on, that it really hurts them. The big pain pieces were the off-season moves, and they infused a lot of talent into the minors that wasn't there before.
Yeah.
And I think anything else that they do is kind of gravy.
Yeah, I think they're in a very strange position where almost any move that they make isn't actually going to subtract all that much from their major league roster right now as constructed. You have Encarnacion and Jay Bruce, both of whom are essentially first basemen. They are struggling to fit both of them and Vogelbach and Healy into the lineup on any given day. So once you have Seager back in June,
yeah,
July, whenever that is, you're not going to be just suddenly going to Dylan Moore starting every day. You're going to be going to Vogelbach just more easily starting every day, and Healy probably starting at first again, or something like that, where it's not a drastic drop-off. And so, you know, it could be something where that really kills the morale of the team, and maybe that has repercussions, but that's pretty difficult to measure. And just in terms of production of players, by that point, you'll also have probably J.P. Crawford or Shed Long or maybe a, you know, Justice Sheffield also up. So you'll have guys coming up who have talent who can supplement.
Right.
You'll have Braden Bishop who can help if, you know, Malik Smith needs a blow or something like that. Like, you'll have, they have depth options that, in a very macro sense, should be able to help if you're actually in that position in July. You will have players who can fill in on a starting basis that will not hurt too much.
Yeah.
No, I think that's fair. And I think to sort of answer the question like very directly, like if they're in first place, you can absolutely still trade Bruce and Encarnacion specifically, because that just opens up playing time for people who are younger and are going to be on the team in the future. So it's like if they're going to make the playoffs, I don't think it really matters whether or not, you know, and Encarnacion and Bruce are around to see it. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather trade them and maybe hurt the chances of making the playoffs if it means we get, like, a prospect or a useful player and also more consistent at-bats for Healy and Vogelbach. Like, that's fine. I don't think we should completely change our entire perspective on the organization based off, you know, 25 games that could morph into something better, but it's still not worth mortgaging your future. Okay, let's get to a lighter question that really doesn't have anything to do with baseball, which we always like these, so thank you everyone who sends us nonsense.
Silly questions, yeah.
Especially our dear friend and frequent question asker, Isabel Manassian. This is a multi-pronged question, so I'll break it down for you. The 2019 Mariners are hosting a party. That part is not a question, that's a fact. Please discuss the hypothetical dynamics. Who devotes hours to cleaning the house? Who crafts an inexplicably complex signature cocktail? Who refuses to move from the snack table? Who gets rowdy and chucks the Christmas tree out the window? So let's start with the responsible person. Who devotes hours to cleaning the house?
Kyle Seeger.
Jay Bruce.
You think Bruce?
Dad.
I think Kyle Seeger's the guy who gets like a drop of alcohol in him and just goes nuts. Like, I think he loses his inhibitions.
No.
I think that's the vibe
I
get.
Sleep.
I think he goes to sleep.
I
falls asleep in the recliner at like 6:30.
Oh, yeah.
I can see that. I do think Jay Bruce is more of a cleaner.
Yeah.
I think Kyle's kind of
he cleans up the
play
house.
It as it lies sort of guy when it comes to cleanliness.
I think Omar Narvaez pitches in with the cleaning.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Sure.
For some reason, I feel like Marco Gonzalez is like a very clean person. I bet he's very organized.
I think that's good. I also think Marco is a work hard, play hard kind of guy.
Yeah. I think he'll clean the house knowing that he's going to drink 9 beers afterwards.
Who spends hours crafting the signature cocktail? I think Corey Guerin does that.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's very into, like,
I can see that big time.
Higher culture. Like,
and relievers have a lot of time
himself
to sit around and think.
Yeah,
so he's probably already done this
and
in his mind.
He's a thinky guy. So
he is a thinker.
I think
Corey, Anthony Swarzak only drinks from his personal flask. I think he has his own.
Because he's Mad-Eye Moody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Swarzak's definitely the guy who insists on playing the music that nobody else wants to listen to.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're listening to this entire, like, I don't know. What would Anthony Swarzak listen to, do you think?
Corn?
I feel like it's a little aggro.
Yeah,
but
some Alter Bridge.
I also...
Freak on a Leash mixed with Freak a Leak.
Oh, I would listen to that. I would go to that party.
Yeah.
All right, Anthony Swarzak, if you're doing let me know. Yeah, we're around. Okay, who refuses to move from the snack table? I mean, there's some low-hanging fruit.
No.
It would be easy to say Vogelbach, but I don't want to say Vogelbach.
Who's the big snacker?
I think Malix is a big snacker.
D posted an Instagram of his birthday last night, and he was just like eating some of the greasiest looking pizzas I've ever seen in my life. Or he says he's like eats 8 in an hour. Like, D just strikes me as someone who can just
doesn't gain weight.
He did say,
yeah,
down
that's
him.
Fair.
Yeah,
so
that
yeah,
makes
I
sense.
Think, and I don't think he drinks. So yeah, just like
that's fair. I'm just thinking like, because like D doesn't really have like nervous energy. Like D's very like entertaining,
smooth,
but he's very composed.
Who would be super awkward
like,
at a party?
Malix is like constantly full of energy.
Who would be awkward
who'd
at a party?
Awkward. I feel like. No.
Oh, Mitch.
Tom Murphy.
Mitch would be the Mitch. Tom Murphy maybe too, but Mitch would 100% be like.
I don't even think he'd be awkward. He just would be like, he'd be in a corner and he would like have a very like a basic pleasant conversation.
Yeah,
and then he'd be like, our conversation here.
Who would be your safe haven where like you don't know anyone at the party? Maybe like things are going weird and you just need someone to talk to, hang out in the corner with. Is that Domingo?
Domingo?
John likes Domingo?
Yeah, Domingo is fun.
He's got the nicest face of any human being I've ever seen.
I think
he's smiling while he swings.
Yeah.
Like.
I think if I just need to, like, maybe I'm feeling it a little bit, I need to sit down and relax, I'm finding Mike Leake and just
that's
putting my arm around him.
See, I think Mike Leake's maybe on the porch into
rowdier
shit than everyone
else.
No,
I don't think rowdy shit. I think Mike Leake is, like, off by himself for sure. But
that'd
also
be Rumbelow.
Like,
Rumbelow would be, like, scaling the building.
Rumbelow's not invited.
Rumbelow's on the roof.
Rumbelow's not invited.
Wow.
Mike
he got
Leake
ejected
out,
today.
Out
he's
out
ejected
the
from
porch.
Kate's party.
Okay.
Mike Leake is out on the porch smoking cigarettes and talking about like deep philosophical life stuff.
Yeah.
But
I'm into that.
Yeah.
I haven't done that.
I was going to say, Wade actually, I think, would be
Wade is a good calmer.
Like, Wade's,
yeah.
I think also Wade
is
might
the
might be
I would
the
person.
Wade's my ride home, I think. Okay, who's the one who gets rowdy and chucks the Christmas tree out the window? Assuming this is a Christmas party now.
I will say, there was not a Christmas party where I know that particular event happened.
Oh, I see.
Ryan, I think.
Yeah, that seems right.
Gets, like, I just think he gets overexcited
and
hyper, and he feels like something's a really good idea. And
I think the sleeper there would be Felix. Felix gets excited.
Yeah, that's true.
He's very excitable. He loves to make a scene.
Yeah.
I think he would like the attention.
I think he'd be hyped, yeah. And I mean, you know, he's got a stronger lower body now at this point in his career. I think he could squat.
Maybe Felix and Ryan each take an end.
Yeah. Sling the tree out.
Yeah.
I think they would be great buddies in a different, you know, if they were in, like, coming up the same age.
Felix loves Vogelback. Have you noticed
that?
Yeah,
there's a lot of good hugs.
Yeah, Felix loves Vogelback. He always
I would love Vogelback, too, if I was a pitcher, and this dude was never playing in the field and hitting better than literally everyone in baseball.
True.
Like, this guy is only providing the best possible chance for me to win and nothing else.
Yeah,
like,
Vogelback is pure value. That's a good point. He doesn't do anything to decrease his value. Both probably on the
but
field
he's
and off the field.
Not out there like saving you with double
no,
plays.
No, but
or
you don't need him to, right? Like,
and you wouldn't expect him to.
Yeah, and like if he was at, like, you're not asking him to do what you're asking like Ryan or like Jay Bruce to do out there. Like, I love Domingo, but like Domingo just like jogs after everything and then like somehow doesn't get to the ball very like for like 85 years.
Yeah, he's a curious outfielder.
He's ponderous, I think.
Yeah.
Ponderous is a good way to describe it.
Okay, let's end with this one, which is actually weirdly appropriate given the location of our recording studio.
Mm-hmm.
This is from our friend Kazuto. Kazuto wants to know if the Lookout Landing staff played a drinking game where they should take a sip every time they call the home park Safeco, how long would it take John to find himself on a bar floor?
First of all,
not that long.
First of all, friend of the podcast, Kazuto Yamazaki, thank you very much for calling in. Hurtful.
And calling you out.
Yeah, and calling in and calling me out. There's a lot of me, so it would take quite some time to
That's
really
true.
Knock me out.
Yeah, I mean, John has to have like 3 shots to every normal human's.
I have never blacked out.
Wow, flex.
I do say Safeco a lot, so I think that is a pretty reasonable context for the first time.
Okay. It also depends on what the time frame is here. Like, if it's like, is it an all-day thing? Are we at a game? I guess in this scenario, where John's on a bar floor. So if we're in a bar for like, let's say 4 hours.
We can say the pen floor.
Okay, yeah. If we're in the pen for an entire game. Let's say we get there 30 minutes before the game. Because we have nothing better to do.
We want those happy hour prices.
Yeah, we're there on a weekday.
I mean, so what this question is really about is, will John just continue to refer to it as Safeco Field?
Yes.
And I feel like
I think we all will, right?
There's a good chance he will.
It's so much
I'm not
easier.
Even doing it, like, with knowingly.
The real problem is that T-Mobile doesn't have an easy two-syllable abbreviation.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Like, which is such a lazy...
The Mobe.
Like, like the Mobe. Sucks.
Momo?
Like, Timo. Like, all of them are like...
Momagentimo problems?
Yeah. Like, Safeco. Easy.
TMP.
Like,
not good.
TMP is not the worst thing I've heard,
it's
though.
Not the
no
worst.
One's gonna ever say that, no. But... I mean, we are change makers.
Anyway.
Timbo?
No.
Tempo? Have you guys heard this Lizzo song called Tempo?
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
Some...
Yeah.
I can't say it.
Kate, I could see Missy Elliott enter Kate's body and then immediately leave. Kate was like, I can't.
It looked very
You never go full
so
Missy.
Very
disoriented. I embarrassed myself pretty hard with my Migos thing
last
time, but I have been listening to them.
For breakfast. Some Migos for breakfast.
Yeah, you thought they were a rowdy group of golden retrievers
and
then a Mexican breakfast, both of which are incorrect. So yeah, John's getting drunk.
But also, I don't want to twerk here in the
no, this is
Irish
not the time.
Pub.
The Irish band twerking long ago. Actually, let's end with this. Who's your favorite Irish Mariner?
Sean O'Malley. Obviously. I mean, come on.
He is definitely the most Irish name.
But
JJ
was
Putz
great.
Was definitely
he was
Irish.
So great. That's an
You don't
Irish
think so? I mean, he just had red hair. Sean Green, that's an Irish guy for sure.
I don't know confidently the Irishness of any other player.
I mean, it's pretty easy to guess.
Hmm.
And the cool thing about the Irish is they don't get that mad. So we'll be fine. They're very gentle, calm people.
I'll say Sean Armstrong.
He's probably, yeah. I think anyone named Sean,
it's a good guess.
It's a good guess,
solid
yeah.
guess.
But Sean Green was S-E-A-N.
I bet Ryan Healy's some kind of Irish.
I think most white people are a little bit
Irish.
I think that's how it works. All right, well, let us know what you think. We would love to hear your favorite Irish Mariner. let us know what you think about these in-person podcasts. We like doing them, and we get to go to bars, which is fun.
If the audio quality on this was solid enough, we will do this repeatedly.
Yeah. Let us know.
Yeah, if you own a bar and want to host
there it is.
Yeah, let us know. True.
We will pay for food and drink. So.
Any bar that gives us a private podcast room gets, I don't know, a premium Lookout Landing membership? I don't know.
The gold member.
Yeah.
We'll shout it out as opposed to saying this is an indiscriminate
Irish
bar.
Yeah, it's an undisclosed location. You gotta sample all the Irish bars in Seattle to find us.
I'm sure they're out doing that right now.
Yeah, well, what's next for the Mariners? We got the Padres, I believe, and then Texas.
Back home.
So pretty winnable, hopefully. I mean, it seems like a good...
I don't know. Texas stuck it to the Astros.
That's true. I think it's smoke and mirrors.
The Mariners have the first highest run scored per game. Texas has the second highest run scored per game.
I refuse to acknowledge them as anything.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm saying Joey Gallo might disagree with you.
Yeah, Joey Gallo might take a bat to your head.
He might hit a baseball from where he is in Texas right now through the window of this Irish pub.
Yeah. All of the weird sounds you heard were actually Joey Gallo taking batting practice. He's just outside. We won't let him in. So this is a Mariners podcast, Joey. We will not let you on.
You're too tall for our mic.
You're too tall for our mic, and we're very afraid of you.
Very much so.
All right, well, that was a good and normal podcast. Hope you all enjoyed it. And I'm going to pass it over to Kate for our signature ending.
Habai! That was an Irish.